our stakeholders, thank you very much for heeding to our call, for responding to the request that we have extended to you all. And the topic that you are dealing with today is quite an interesting one, and above being interesting, we have had discussion as a committee as to say, yes, things may surface in whatever form they surface in, but at the end of the day, through this MTT report we are dealing with today, we strongly believe that there are so many things that have been raised in this report, but what is more important, it's now for all of us to come and say together here, as we are playing a very important part in our education system in the country, what we are here to do today is to say, yes, things have happened. There were issues that were raised that made the minister even to come with that ministerial task team. We have looked at the report of the task team, looked at even at the recommendations. What we are here to say today is, and we strongly believe to say, we have got one objective, all of us, all the unions, SGB associations, us as members of parliament, DBE, and everybody who is interested in the quality education of our children and the good education system out there. The main objective is to say, let us have a clean system. Let us have good ways of working together to make sure that in no way where we hinder, in no way where we find ourselves in trouble. It's good that things like this, they do surface, they do come out, but the main thing that is important is to say, we are coming out of this together. What is it that we don't want to see? We don't want to see such things happening in future. And what is it that we do differently to make sure that our system operates very well? Yes, looking at the report, that is why we requested all the stakeholders to be here, because the report touches to all of us as we are here, even ourselves as members of parliament, when it comes to the issues of legislation, the role that the unions are playing, the role that the SGBs are playing in the system, especially, as you know, that around the issues of teacher appointments and the promotional post. ELRC, we want to hear even yourself, the role that you are playing here, and how do you respond to the report as such. Faith, you have got a very important role also that you are playing. So that is why we said, maybe for a day, let us come under one roof today and say, in no way where we are going to say, we are finding fault on that one and that one. Yes, if there are things that we want to raise, this is a platform, this is an open space where we can say, but good people, if we can tighten there and there, in future we can't find something like that. So we are going to have that healthy discussion today. That is why what we are pleading for. Let us have a open discussion, very healthy, but at the end with that one objective of making sure that what we have encountered, really, we don't see such things happening in future, but we are saying, as stakeholders, what is the vital role, the important role that we can play, all of us, to build together and move forward and have that very stable and strong system in our country where we are saying our learners are safe, learners, everything is good for them, they can get quality education, and teachers can teach well, learners can learn well, parents can play their role, you as these stakeholders here can also contribute to the system. So that is the note, and that is the spirit that this meeting of today will love to see, that let us build together. We've got quite a number of stakeholders that are here today, good people, and we know that we might have limited time, but as we are saying, because we are here, we know exactly what to do. The time that will be allocated, that has been communicated to each and every stakeholder around here, is that at least we'll give you 15 minutes just to make your presentation, as we are saying, yes, in a way you'll be responding to what is here, what touches you, but at the same time we are sponsoring to build on what is entailed here. 15 minutes, we just thought it will be fine. We can appreciate it even if you can take less than 15 minutes so that we can have more time for discussions, because at the end, we want to look at all your presentation, then have that concrete discussion that is going to take us somewhere. So we are warmly welcome to this Parliament of South Africa, the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education, and we are looking forward to share so many experiences and ideas with you in making sure that we continue to build our education. Mr. Brown, before we even start, I don't know whether there are any apologies that you've received for today's meeting.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, honourable members. We have received apologies from Honourable Zim Simong, Honourable Nguni, and Honourable Kosa, who need to be at other committee meetings this morning. Thank you, Chair.
Okay. Thank you very much for those apologies. I know it will be a very difficult exercise if I can request each and every one of you to introduce him or herself. But what I can do as part of... It's important. Honourable members, let me start here. Can we introduce ourselves? I think it will be important. Yes, we are many, but just quickly do that. Just introduce yourself so that all our stakeholders can know exactly who are we. Let me start by doing that. I'm Nomalunge Lukina. I'm the chairperson of this committee. Thank you very much. Can I hand over to you, honourable members, to do the same?
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. My name is Honorable Pinky Mugoto. I'm from Basic Education. I'm the whip. Thank you.
Goedemorgen, good morning. Ek is Desiree van der Walt.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Gavin Davis.
Good morning. My name is Tsero Mabiga, the member of the Portfolio Committee from KZN. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. Goeiemôre almal, Sonja Boshoff.
Good morning, Majeke, Basic Committee.
Good morning, Joyce Vuyiswa Person, Basic Education Committee. Thank you.
Good morning, Timothy Koza, member of this committee.
Thank you very much, honourable members. And we do have our support staff. Can you do the intro?
Good morning, everybody, honourable members. I'm Llewellyn Brown. I'm the committee secretary for the Portfolio Committee.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Dennis Bandy, acting unit manager, committees.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Madimeja Kekana, the researcher for the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you very much for that. Then what I will do, we have got ELRC with us. Can you introduce yourself and the team, if ever you do have someone?
Thank you, Chairperson. Today I'm alone. My chairperson could not make it. It's in the ELRC, the General Secretary.
Thank you, General Secretary. We have got Says.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. My name is Reg, Bridge Raj, the CEO of SAIS. With me on my right is Mr. Polo, Head for Registration and Ethics. And behind me, Ms. Galen Bowles, Executive Member of SAIS, representing the Chairperson today.
Thank you very much. Then we have got our labour unions. We have got NAPTOSA with us.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Basil Manuel, the Executive Director of NAPTOSA, and next to me is Nkosi Pendula Ntantala, the President of NAPTOSA.
Thank you, NAPTOSA. We've got SAOU.
Good morning, Madam Chair. I'm Chris Klooper, the General Secretary of the SAOU, and next to me is Louis Swanepoel. He's the newly elected President of the SAOU.
Congratulations, newly elected president. Peu? Oh, we don't have Peu. Okay. Natu?
Thank you, Chairperson. I am Siphosethu Lindinkosi Kangcobo, president of the National Teachers Union. And next to me is Deputy President of the National Teachers Union, Mr. Alan Thompson.
Thank you, President. Satu?
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Mabutho Cele, Deputy President of Satu. And next to me is Nkosana Dolophi, the Deputy General Secretary of Satu. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Then we have got the school governing body associations. There are two of them. We've got FEDSAS.
Good morning and thank you, Chair. Paul Collett, CEO of FEDSAS, and on my left, Mr. Henry Botha, senior employee of FEDSAS.
Thank you. GBF, Governing Body Association.
Morning, Chair. Morning, everybody. Tim Gordon, the National CEO of the Governing Body Foundation.
Hopefully, I've mentioned everyone this year. Okay, thank you very much. Let's get in then to what the stakeholders are going to be sharing with us concerning this report that you are gathered here. And remember, we said, even looking even at the recommendations and so forth, we'll even appreciate if you can even sponsor your own views. We know exactly that you have done that to the MTT, but here, as we are saying, is the discussion now emanating from everything that has been reported to us. Then the first one will do the presentation, your 15 minutes or less, it's you say, ELRC. Your role here and what is it that you can do and say on this issue and make sure that with your role that you are playing, how can we care for this in future so that you don't find such. Over to you, Ms. General Secretary.
Thank you, Chair. I think earlier on I said I'm alone today. I was only saying that for the purposes of introduction. But the ELRC, Chairperson, I need to place it on record, is parties to the ELRC, and parties are here. The employer, Mr. Kutumela, and the labor union. So that's the ELRC. Therefore, for this session of the day, I'm only the spokesperson of the ELRC. Chairperson, in responding to the request, firstly, we appreciate the invitation. And in responding to the request that we had received, we thought that perhaps we must make use of this opportunity to explain what role does the ELRC play in the broader picture of issues related to promotions and appointments, because we did the same when the MTT approached us. Therefore, that is basically the approach. And then I'll also make mention to say, how has the ELRC responded to some of the issues raised in the report itself? Chair, in doing that, I want to quickly reflect on the areas where ELRC has been referred to in the report. The first aspect that has been raised there is in relation to our bargaining processes, in particular the PEM, which is a consolidation of all our collective agreements and the regulations and the gazette as published by the minister. The second aspect that refers to the ELRC in the report is the quality management system, which the report indicates that it was concluded in 2014, but we also wish to highlight that the collective agreement does not enjoy the majority of the signatories, therefore it has not been implemented. The third aspect relates to the unions admitted to the PLRC, which should form part and parcel of the selection process insofar as the interviews are concerned. We will also explain further in relation to that. The last one being us having been served with a letter in 2014 to conduct the investigation, which we did not, Chairperson, purely because we do not have the authority to conduct investigations. But however, as a stakeholder interested in what is happening in the education, we engaged with SAIS, and we took comfort from the fact that SAIS was to institute an investigation. Therefore, we also accepted the approach adopted by the minister by appointing the task team to investigate. We then felt that we will await the outcome of those processes. If there's any further action required from ourselves, we will take it up at that point in time. In my introduction, I've briefly indicated that we could not respond to the request to investigate purely because our operations are highly regulated in terms of the Labor Relations Act as amended. We exist purely to ensure that there's maintenance and promotion of labor peace within the system, being the public education. And we do that by providing a platform for parties to engage collectively through the collective bargaining processes. But should they not see eye to eye, there's always a potential for a dispute, so we have to prevent. But if the dispute does emanate, we have an obligation in terms of the Act to provide the resolution of such. Therefore, we could not play any role in relation to the request to investigate. Chair, I've highlighted briefly, I'm not going to talk into detail, the legislative framework that regulates promotion and appointments. But in relation to the LRC, our guiding legislation is the personnel administration measures that has been highlighted by the report. Key in that PEM is reference to LRC Resolution 5 of 1998 that deals with the processes of advertising and filling of educator posts, which in the process itself, there's this obligation to the employer to extend an invitation to the teacher unions that are admitted at the LRC at the provincial level to play an observer role. I'll elaborate more as I talk to the presentation. Chair, also in trying to streamline the processes and ensure that there's consistency and fairness in how our commissioners deal with disputes as and when they are referred to ourselves, the LRC has recently concluded Collective Agreement Number 3 of 2016, wherein we are providing guidelines to the commissioners how they should deal with disputes where promotion and appointments have been the source of grievance for employees. In doing that, Chairperson, we are guided by Schedule 7 in relation of, Schedule 7 of the LRA, where specifically it talks to the unfair labor practice. This is very important that we all have the same understanding because that's purely where the ELRC features in. Where an employee, an educator is aggrieved as a result of how the process was handled, the ELRC in responding to such a grievance which comes to us in the form of a dispute, we are limited only insofar as to that which is defined as unfair labor practice, which therefore means, Chairperson, if an educator comes being aggrieved, having allegations that posts were sold either by departmental officials or by union officials as alleged in the report, the LRC does not entertain that part, nor is an educator able to come and present such to the LRC, because that educator is only limited in terms of the procedural and the substantive fairness of the process. So we only restrict our involvement and interaction with the complaint insofar as the process. Why am I putting emphasis on this? It's purely a person of what we also responded to in the processes of investigation to say when educators approach the LRC, they will not be in any position to put reliance on that other information that would have occurred or alleged to have occurred through the processes of appointment and promotion if that is not strictly limited to the process itself. And in that, Chairperson, we ensure that when the commissioners deal with those cases, they ask specific and relevant questions because they are also guided by the Act in terms of the unfair labor practice when you have to make a determination whether indeed there's a case or not. So when aggrieved educators lead evidence to our cases, they would not be in any way in a position to make reference to something that has occurred outside the process reg.
they are restricted and limited to stick to the process itself. Was there any act by the school governing body or any official within the process that suggests that that educator was discriminated against? So that is what then we presented to the task team to say we have no way of knowing. And even in assessing the evidence laid in our processes, all our awards, was the requirement is that the commissioner must give us a detailed analysis, the evidence that has been laid from the witnesses and all sorts of issues that came up in the process. Nowhere is there reference to any corruption that has taken place outside the process, because I suppose it's because the educators are restricted by our own processes that do not allow them to come with something that would have transpired outside the process itself. Chair, that explanation summarizes the points that I've put there on this slide. Therefore, the allegations of fraud, they are not in any way contained in all the awards that we have issued. We have no way of knowing if any of the educators that have referred this type of dispute to ourselves did so purely because they were unhappy about a certain amount paid to a certain somebody to ensure that another candidate wins or does not win. I also need to hasten to mention, Chairperson, that the LRA also defines the ULP to be an act or an omission by the employer. In this instance, the SGP is not the employer. Therefore, for that educator to have legitimate grounds to even come to the LRC, they have to await the HOD to appoint somebody else. That somebody else could be the person who's alleged to have made a payment to secure the job. We have no way of knowing. So that's another gatekeeper that we have put in place to say, you can't come to the LRC if no appointment has been done. If you are aggrieved because of the processes and so forth, you need to await such time that the appointment has been done by the HOD itself. But however, in saying that, we're not saying that school governing bodies do not have an obligation to ensure that in discharging that responsibility on behalf of the employer, they attend to the legal issues that require them to attend to, because they have been designated to act on behalf of the employer, but they are not the employer. Therefore, recommending does not constitute the employment itself. Chairperson, we want to talk briefly on the collective agreement, which has been cited in a range of areas in the investigation itself. The collective agreement does provide for the process. In the process itself, there's that requirement that I made mention of, that teacher unions have to be invited. But equally, the role of teacher unions in the process is clearly defined. In other words, they do not constitute part of the panel wherein they are to influence the scoring or even have discussions on whether the candidate has performed well or not. Their role is purely restricted to observing the process to ensure such that it is done or if there's adherence to how it should be done. So therefore, as the LRC, we do not see anything wrong or negative, Chairperson, having the unions to observe the process, because somebody must be there as a watchdog, and that somebody cannot be part of the panel. They must be there as an independent party. They might have an interest, we don't know, but for us, we give them the benefit of a doubt that purely if you look at the definition of the term to observe, it simply means that they are not playing an active role. The chairperson, they are not there to influence any decisions. So as part of training the school governing bodies, I think that is the responsibility of the employer to empower the school governing bodies to make them understand and put more emphasis in responding to this report in terms of the school governing body ensuring that the role of the union in the processes is purely to observe but not to influence the process, whether the candidate is suitable or not. Should the union observe that indeed the process was not adhered to, they have a responsibility to take the matter up in the form of a grievance with the HOD, who's the real employer, to bring to the attention of the HOD any alleged irregularities
in relation to the process itself, because we have to ensure that the process is fair to all the applicants. Chairperson, in conclusion, we have taken note of the fact that the report refers to the processes that the LRC has undertaken in relation to responding to what issues have come up from the report. We take pride, Chairperson, in reporting to the committee that the teacher unions approached the LRC after having had their own discussion and agreed that we cannot turn a blind eye to the allegations that have been in the media that were investigated at the time by the task team, because that indicates that indeed there might be something not right in the process. Therefore, as the ELRC, what we can do as a contribution, because it doesn't depend purely on what the LRC does, the minimum contribution that we can do is to strengthen the process by revising or reviewing the collective agreement insofar as the Resolution 5 of 1998. So we have that, we had received that officially. That person is being highlighted to say we haven't sent any party from the LRC coming to be defensive to the issues. Everyone has acknowledged and agreed that indeed there is something wrong in the system. And as such, they have confirmed their willingness to contribute to improving the situation. And the starting point, Chairperson, is not limited to this, but the starting point is that we must revise the collective agreement and see how to further strengthen and enhance the process such that we discharge our responsibility of ensuring that there's fairness in the processes. Candidates are appointed purely on merit, not on any other reason. Chairperson, as a curtain raiser, I think that's few words that the LRC can say. In any entertainment area or event, the first people to perform, they are just there to raise the curtain for the main performers. So in those words, Chairperson, we want to thank the portfolio committee for allowing the LRC to reflect, to say this is what we do, this is our mandate, we are only restricted in terms of this, but this is a commitment shown by all our parties. And I also need to add, Chairperson, that as we speak, we have a draft discussion document that has been shared with the chief negotiators, drafted by the employee. So hopefully sometime next year we'll be coming back to give you progress in that regard. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, SG, for ELRC. Thank you very much for even sticking to 10 minutes of your presentation so that we can get at least 15 minutes for discussion. Honourable members, that was the take from the LRC. Though I would plead with honourable members, if we want to take any discussion on this presentation, can we stick to it? Can we not open up? Because we're still going to get more. Even if you say, let us not take discussions, for me, I would be comfortable so that we take at least some of them, then we have a discussion. But I don't want to cut you or to shut the doors for you. If ever there are things that you want to raise from what the LRC has just presented to us, I will be happy to open up for you, but very briefly. So remembering that you still have all these unions, all these people around the allegations and the report, that you still need to take the discussion. Honourable Mabiga, I can see you want to say something. Can I see another Honourable Davis?
Thanks, Chair.
Let me take those hands.
May I suggest that we allow other parties to make their presentations, because I'm afraid we are not going to be able to limit ourselves only to the presentation that we have just.
The proposal put forth, honourable members, because that is what exactly I was warning you on. The proposal is, let us allow all of them to present so that we take the discussion at the same time. Any seconder to that? It's seconded. Okay, thank you. Can we then have SAIS coming forth? Your 10 minutes says, or 15 minutes, I said 15, your 10 to 15 minutes, and we will time you. You are starting now, it's 10 past 10, so, okay, that is good. CEO, you are starting now.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, for inviting SAIS
to...
Before you start, because we have had engagements with you. We have had a little bit of your beat on this the last time we met with you. Remember, there were also even investigations that you had taken part in. Talk to this issue and your role again and your investigations, and so that we see that link between what you are talking to.
Sure. Thank you very much once again, Honorable Chairperson and members, colleagues. It is an honor again to be in this house. I see the screen is not in our favor, but I will speak to the report that you have in front of you, and hopefully that comes right. Chairperson SACE acknowledges the MTT report. It wishes to place on record that it appreciates the report as a sincere effort to rid the profession of corruption and to strengthen the education system. SACE wishes to make the following clarifications. SACE welcomes the report's recommendations that educators and officials be referred to the SAPS for further investigation. The Council awaits these outcomes and will follow up on educators investigated to determine any breach of the Code of Ethics in terms of Recommendation 1 and 2. Secondly, Chair, SACE has difficulty in understanding why both school-based and office-based educators cease to be office bearers of political parties, Recommendation 13. If educators are prevented from being office bearers of political parties at different levels, then political parties would be bereft of the largest intellectual pool in the country for its leadership ranks and will have to look only for non-teachers to fill positions of leadership in their organizations. This may not be good for a nascent democracy, considering that many a good political leader have been school teachers, as is evident in our history, and in all probability even in our own parliament. Teachers are leaders. It may be wiser to restrict political propaganda or political manipulation from any quarter. Recommendation 15 encapsulated a theme that pervaded sections of the report. There is a perception that SATU dominates decisions of SACE. This matter needs to be clarified. The SACE Act No. 31 of 2000 specifies that 18 of the 30 member council be members from the organized teaching profession. When SACE was conceived, it was the philosophy that the council should be run by the profession. The national teacher unions have agreed that 12 of these members come from SATU. So indeed, SATU has the strongest voice in that 18. Obviously, SATU does not have the majority in the council as alleged. To say that SATU, which is affiliated to COSATU that supports the ANC, muscles in to control SACE and even to influence its decisions is both misleading and malicious. SACE has other union leaders in council, unions leaders in council, presidents and vice presidents, some of whom are here, ministerial reps, leaders of other stakeholder groupings, and it may be instructive, Honorable Chairperson, that their views are canvassed on domination and decision-making in SACE. The above critique has even gone so far as to single out the CEO and the chairperson of SACE as coming from SATU, the relevance of which we find hard to grasp. The CEO does come from SATU and was appointed unanimously after a second round of adverts for the post, as the council could not secure a suitable candidate in its first round. The CEO has yet to be accused of acting in a partial manner. Both NAPTOSA and the SAOU have chaired council. Nearly all decisions of council are by consensus. So rather than a reconceptualization of SAIS, as is suggested in the report, it is recommended that more scrutiny of nominations for council is exercised by the ministry, since the minister appoints councillors, to ensure that educators are appointed to fulfill the profile prescriptions of the SAIS Act. The council is supposed to be composed of councillors that are specializing in different categories. All nominations from the SAIS stakeholders be subject to the same scrutiny, including ministerial reps in council. Recommendation 15 refers to the SAIS investigation report on selling of posts, which I now see is called Cash for Jobs. The following points are noteworthy. SAIS received no formal complaints from any quarter, including the MTT. We had received many complaints anonymously. SATU itself requested SAIS to investigate this phenomenon, and SAIS took an unusual step of setting up a 5-person investigation panel to follow up on whatever leads it could from the media, from the anonymous complainants. Our investigations in the affected provinces, as you will see in the annexure, could not yield any tangible evidence or wrongdoing on the part of any educator. And although many educators spoke animatedly about corruption and bribery regarding the filling of promotion posts, no one was prepared to avail themselves as witnesses. Chairperson, as much as we have our suspicions, and as much as one is tending to believe the rumors out over there, but SAIS processes require to give a fair hearing. We need to have witnesses, we need to have evidence, so that we can charge people to be in breach of the code of ethics. And none was forthcoming. Hence, Chair, it is not inexplicable, as the MTT reports alleges, that SAIS could not provide the MTT with hard and fast instances of malpractices. What do we say to the MTT? There is a strong feeling in School X that there is corruption. We did present the annexed report to the MTT because that is as far as we could go. The council is not empowered to go further than what it has done. This critique has developed a further dimension in that accusations are now being made that SATU influenced, and I've seen this on a website somewhere, says to cover up and present a whitewashed report. Apparently the report is not worth the paper it's written on. SAIS has never been, I must say to this August House Chair, or will ever be, at least in my term, party to masking the truth. Even if SAIS makes mistakes, and we do from time to time, SAIS makes omissions, and we do from time to time, we will admit those. But we will not mask the truth. We invite all concerned individuals or entities to come forward with specific allegations. SAIS does not regard this matter as closed. Recommendation 16 about us submitting the report to the minister is accepted, and we have sent our report to the minister. SAIS remains, Chairperson, in service of education, and we welcome all critiques, harsh as they may be, recommendations and any leads, so that, as you say, we could contribute to the improvement of our education system. Chairperson, what follows is a specific report on the schools that were investigated by the team. We could have written more, but it wouldn't have given us any other conclusion. In fact, we could have written less, in that we had no evidence and no witnesses. But if the members would go through that report, you would have some idea in terms of the schools that we went to and there's some of the observations that were made in the various instances. Many inferences can be drawn where you would find that officials from a union were promoted over and above other candidates that seemed to have wanted, that seemed to be more appropriate for the posts. But again, we could find no evidence of wrongdoing, in that we had no witness or any piece of evidence or document to say that there was some wrongdoing on the part of an educator. Remember, SACE's brief goes as far, Chairperson, as ensuring that an educator abides by the SACE code of ethics. So if there were systemic difficulties, that would be beyond the scope of SACE. And in our view, as the previous input has said, we do believe that the system needs strengthening so that loopholes that are exploited in the promotion procedure are closed. I thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, SACE. We have been taking notes. We'll shelve those notes and questions and contributions. We now get into the unions. The unions, yes, the report was about all the stakeholders, but unions want to hear now from you the role that has been well explained by LRC, that is gazetted, that we know exactly what is it that the role that you need to play when it comes to the processes of promotion and promotion. But the report is revealing another picture to the world, as to say you sometimes overstep what is there. Now we'll invite Satu, your 15 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes to come and present to us your reactions and your way forward, is to say, from the things that have been found in this report, what is it that you say, so that as we take discussion, we also incorporate your input. I'm not sure, Mr. Brown, whether... Oh, let me hand over to you, Satu. We are starting now at 22 minutes past 10. It means by 15 minutes, oh my goodness, by 22, we'll be done.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to the members of the Portfolio Committee, and good morning to our colleagues from the ELRC. We want to thank you, Chair, and the Portfolio Committee for affording us this opportunity to come and make a presentation on the report of jobs for cash for jobs. We must say, Chair, that we are having a detailed submission that we made to the MTT, and we will avail it to the task team. It's a detailed kind of presentation, and because of the challenge of time, Chair, we will not be able to go through the entire report. So what we have done was to summarize the report for purposes of discussion in the committee. We were told by the National Executive Committee of SADC to start the presentation in this way, Chair, to say that we are the South African Democratic Teachers Union. We are an affiliate to COSATU, the Federation of Workers, the biggest federation of workers in the country. And our federation is an ally, unapologetically so, of the African National Congress, the South African Communist Party, and SANCO, which we think it's a constitutional matter, it's a right that we are entitled to in terms of association. We are not apologetic for being members of COSATU, and we are not apologetic for being part of the alliance of the ANC, COSATU, and SANCO, etc. We also want to start our presentation, Chair, by just sharing with the portfolio committee, maybe advise them if they have time. They must maybe read what we read when we prepared this presentation. We look at some daily tips. The daily tips might assist us with the narrative that is there in our country, a painful one of generalization. It goes as follows. These are the following tips, Chair. The first one is that, and that's what we are going to refute in this portfolio committee. The first one is that I'm black, so I'm a criminal. The second one, I'm a Mexican, so I must be a rapist. The third one is I'm white, so I must be perfect. The fourth one is I'm blonde, so I must be dumb. The fourth one is I'm ugly, so I must be poor. And the last one, Chair, in fact, that one was the last one. The difficulty with these tips, Chair, is that they generalize. They create an impression that if you are black, automatically you are a criminal. If you are Mexican, all of Mexican people are rapists. And that's what I think we must try to avoid. It can't be right, Chair, that a union of 260,000 professionals, on the basis of wrong finding of 7 teachers, then we brandish 260,000 teachers, all of them as being corrupt. Can't be right. It's a wrong thing. But we will say, Chair, maybe the reason why all of us, the 260,000 teachers of SADU, are brandished as being corrupt, even though the report is saying only 7 of them are having some serious a case to answer, only 7 of them have a case to answer, we attribute that to the general narrative that says that just because you are black, therefore we associate you to corruption and to being a criminal. I think we must, in this portfolio committee, be frank and say that we will not accept it. We should not be ashamed of being black people. And we should state it that not all of us are criminals and not all of us are corrupt. We have good men and women, professionals in SADU, who are doing their work diligently, sacrificing their time and everything to educate the nation. And therefore, we can't brandish all of them as being corrupt. Chair, coming to the report itself, the report concedes, not something that you create for yourselves, the report concedes, Chair, that there exists no SADU policy. There is no SADU decision to the effect of saying SADU should sell post. That's what the report is saying, not something that somebody was not part of the report is saying. The report concedes, Chair, that SADU has no policy, no decision to the effect of encouraging hair structures to sell post. In fact, Chair, the report vindicates SADU in the sense that the report is bold, and the chairperson of the report was on Radio 702 just a few days after releasing the report, and he was so emphatic, Chair, to say that they never had anything that said that the South African Democratic Teachers Union sold post. That's what Volmik said. We have the recording to that effect. He said that to the country, him as the chair of the MTT said, they never said, they have no evidence, chair, to the effect of anyone concluding that SADU as a union sold posts. So we were vindicated by that. We were saying, chair, that if anyone holds a view, even after Volmik and his report vindicated us, if somebody has information, chair, to the effect of saying that SADU sell posts, in terms of the laws of this country, they should have gone to the nearest police station and opened a case instead of making noise of brandishing 260,000 teachers as being corrupt. We are not corrupt. Our members are not all corrupt. Yes, indeed, the report cites 7 teachers. Our union is saying the law must take its course against the 7 teachers. That's what we have been saying from the start, from the day the report appeared, the article appeared in the City Press. In fact, Chair, as a matter of fact, we were among the first institutions in South Africa to write to the Minister of Basic Education, to write to the General Secretary of the ERC, to write to the CEO of SAIS, requesting them to investigate what appeared in the City Press article. We are amongst the first to do that. And we must say, Chair, throughout the process of the investigation of the MTT, we cooperated with the MTT. They sent us 7 questions. We responded to all the 7 questions, and our responses are then contained in the detailed submission that I spoke about earlier. Never, Chair, did we stop any investigation, including the release of the SAIS report. The South African Democratic Teachers Union never stopped a release of any report. Luckily, SAIS is here. We never went to SAIS. No one can show us here that our union stopped the release of the SAIS report. Never. We never did that. Instead, Chair, we encourage SAIS, we encourage the ERC, we encourage the Department of Basic Education to investigate this. And like I'm saying, we are available to cooperate throughout and throughout. So no one must come with a lie, Chair, to say that we, as our union, stop the release of any report. Like I'm saying, I'm happy SAIS is here. They will be able to answer for themselves if there are such allegations that we stop them to release any report. Chair, the point that we want to make is that even though we submitted, we made that submission to the MTT, our submission was never considered. Even on the facts that we presented to the MTT, instead, the MTT attached our submission to the report as an annexure, which means the content with the flaws it has of the report and changes of names and incorrect facts that they were having still remain as is up to today in the report, even though they are corrected in our submission that we made to them. The MTT never considered not even one of our issues that we raised. Like I'm saying, instead, they attach our submission as an annexure. The MTT dealt with almost 81 cases, Chair. And from the 81 cases, there are 22 of them associated to SADU. 22 of them, Chair, are associated with SADU. And from the 22 associated to SADU as members of SADU, 7 of them are of a serious nature, according to the recommendations that need follow-up action to be taken against those 7 teachers. Our union is saying, Chair, act against them. You don't have to make noise. Don't act to the gallery. Charge the 7 teachers, whether they are SADU or any other union. Charge them. You don't have to make noise and say there are 7 people who were SADU members were involved in that thing. And you don't act
thereafter. And interestingly, Chair, is that when it comes to this SATU member, the report is bold to say this is Teacher Mang, a member of SATU. But when it is other allegations against other teachers, they are quiet about the association. They would not say it's Dolopi Union, it's Mabuto Union. No, they will not say that. But when it comes to SATU members, they are bold to say this is Dolopi, a member of SATU. So you could see, Chair, that, I mean, this was a clear political, according to us, agenda to destroy our union. And that's what I think our union decided, that we will not allow it, Chair, that anyone would come to this portfolio committee with the hope of trying to destroy our union. Coming back to the question of generalization, Chair, you can't, Chair, when there is one councillor of a political party, for instance, say, in Cape Town, who makes a racist statement, post a racist thing on Facebook, one councillor post a racist statement in the Facebook and then generalize to say all members of that political party are racist. You can't do that. We have not done that. So we are saying rules should apply to all. They should not be rules for a certain category of people in our country who are not applicable to the others. We say, yes, seven people who are SATU members, serious allegation, but don't say all SATU members are corrupt. Act against the seven, just like we are saying. The one councillor who posted that racist statement, that political party must act against that one councillor and not brandish the entire party as being racist. So because of the 1 minute that I'm having, Chair, is that we still condemn a SATU. Any selling of posts. We don't want to associate ourselves with any unprofessional act. We are still making the point that the law must take its course against anyone who would have offended the laws of our country. And that's the submission, Chair, maybe because of time that we wanted to make. There are other things that we would have raised, but maybe during the question time we'll come back to them. It is not a sin, Chair, as I'm concluding. It is not a crime for us to be the biggest union. This union, Chair, was built over years through sweat and blood of people. People died to establish this union. And therefore, we can't be ashamed today to be members of this mighty South African Democratic Teachers Union. So we pause.
Thank you, Satu. As we are correctly saying, we're still going to get a chance. We're still going to be engaging on the presentations that you are just coming up with. Can we then move on to NAPTOSA? NAPTOSA is starting at 10:30. Mine saying 10:37. Yeah.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you for the opportunity to come and present to you on behalf of NAPTOSA. I want to start at the outset by saying that rumors about the sale of posts, or rumors about ill-appointed people or people not being appointed through the correct processes have been there for a long, long time. And the ministry itself was aware, and so we were unhappy that in fact very little was done. So when there was a decision taken to investigate, we were happy, because these rumors sully the entire profession. They are not only placed at the door of certain people. However, I want to, at the outset, indicate that we were unhappy that this was simply just a task team, because the mandate of the task team was limited by the very nature of the task team. Its ability to investigate and subpoena people, etc., was simply just not there. And as a result, the outcome would always have been limited. And we acknowledge that from the very outset, even though we gave the task team our full support and certainly did participate. I want to also applaud those people who were bold enough to come forward, the so-called whistleblowers. However, within the report, I want to also indicate this was one of our serious problems, where people were mentioned by name, etc., those who had exposed things, and which sets them up, and which limits the potential of other people to come forward in the future when such issues may arise. My colleague has spoken at length about generalizations, which is one of the issues that we've also raised in our full response, where terms are used that unions are generally adversarial. Now, that cannot be true, because there will be times when we are adversarial, but there will be more times when we're not. However, these generalizations pepper the entire report. There's no evidence in the report of wrongdoing by NABTOSA or its members. And as a result, we find it very difficult that the report, whilst acknowledging some of these, then paints everybody with the same brush and indicates that all the unions and all teachers, in fact, are simply just corrupt and not doing what they're supposed to do. However, we want to acknowledge that the report has probably only scratched the surface. And what we would like to see is that deeper investigations happen where there's been an indication of wrongdoing, and not simply just carte blanche statements being made. I will now reflect briefly on some of the recommendations that were made. First of all, that if there is an indication of wrongdoing, that we believe if people have been enriching themselves, and there's evidence, that lifestyle audits must be done. We can check. We know when people are living beyond their means, and we know when people are seemingly too well off for their station. And that is what we would like to see done. We would like to see disciplinary actions taken wherever there's been an indication of wrongdoing, and support the notion that those people who have been fingered to have done wrong things must be held to account, charge them. Officials in the department, recommendation 2, where there's indication of wrongdoing, they too must be charged, and they too must be removed from positions where they can impact and influence appointments of people, etc. It is very difficult to accept that officials in a department could be simply allowed to continue after we have seen that there was sufficient doubt about their integrity. I've already spoken to the issue of whistleblowers, but the point that I still need to mention there is we are concerned that very little has been done to protect them, even after the fact, even after exposing their names, etc. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to indicate to you that one of our greatest problems with the recommendations was that the task team seemed to take unto itself powers far greater than the mandate of investigating the sale of posts. And as a result, recommendations were made about various things, such as membership to unions, etc., and powers of the governing bodies, and so on. And it became simply just what we had described in our full report as a general free-for-all. We believe that there are bad governing bodies, and there are many good governing bodies as well. And that getting parents involved in the governance structures and getting them involved in the appointment of teachers is the right thing. What we need to be doing is attending to the areas where things go wrong, not summarily throw the proverbial baby out of the bathwater because some of these governing bodies have acted incorrectly. Rather, we would lay the criticism at the door of various provincial education departments with the lack of training and this one-hit wonder type training of governing bodies, as well as the ELRC had mentioned, to ensure that the governing bodies know what the role is of observers, as opposed to allowing observers to exceed their own mandates. Ladies and gentlemen, various recommendations are made in terms of appointments, of principals and the like, etc. And as NABTOSA, together with the other unions, we have said we agree that the appointment procedures need updating. And as a result, we have taken that initiative to say, let us look at how appointment of teachers, appointment of people to promotion posts is done. And we have already started that process by an initiative of ourselves within the ELRC and with the employer. because we recognize that some of these agreements were written at a time when things were different, and now we must see how much change there can be. So within the teacher unions themselves, there's been a recognition that certain things need to be tightened up, because we will have the corrupt with us always, and we must limit the scope that the corrupt can have. I want to start concluding by saying NAPTOSA does believe that our role as a party politically non-aligned entity is the correct one. Take note, party politically non-aligned. Not politically non-aligned. Not apolitical. We believe we always have a political view, and we will always express it at the appropriate time. But we have always supported that we should not be in support of a particular party. I also want to indicate that when it comes to recommendations such as SACE, etc., that NAPTOSA has a particular view that the ministry obviously has a powerful role to play within SACE, even though, as a side comment, it makes no contribution to SACE. The contributions to run SACE is made by teachers. And maybe if the minister's voice was followed with contributions as well, it would be a little different. But let me add that the role that we've played in SACE, and we believe SACE has the right role to play, and if we believe that it is not right, NAPTOSA's voice would be heard in that particular debate. To conclude, we're pleased that the investigation has confirmed that there are people who are doing the wrong thing and that they have sometimes been protected. We are displeased by the fact that nothing has happened to those people since then. It is unacceptable that our membership have to compete on an uneven footing. However, we want to say that we will continue to fight in the LRC at first for processes that will ensure that all our members will compete fairly. We will not represent a membership that believe that they are entitled to posts. We will represent them because they are entitled to compete evenly for those posts. Madam Chair, on that note, I want to say that we in NAPTOSA will support anything which will begin to fix the brokenness of the department and corruption which is there. However, we want to distance ourselves from the notion that the department and or the unions are essentially corrupt, because they're not. Thank you.
Thank you very much, NAPTOSA. And thank you very much even sticking to your 10 minutes. Then let's move to NATU. Yeah, we are starting again. It's your 10, it's at 10:47. NAPTOSA started at 10:37 to 10:47. They're just on time. Yeah, I would say 10:48 is fine. Is coming to assist you. That's exactly what our SGBs and teacher unions, we must make sure that we introduce in our schools. ICT, computer literate. Thank you. Okay. No, it's fine. It's fine, Mr. Thompson. Yeah, you can start with your presentation.
I'm representing the National Teachers Union in relation to the ministerial task team, which was investigating the selling of posts in the Republic of South Africa. Well, firstly, Chair, as the National Teachers Union, we really appreciate the courtesy that has been extended to us and the opportunity that was given to us by the the portfolio committee to react on the report of the MTT in relation to the selling of posts. However, we want to indicate upfront that the National Teachers Union is going to speak more and react on the methodology that was utilized and the process that was utilized by the ministerial task team, which we believe that had a lot of limitation in as far as we are concerned. And unfortunately, the National Teachers Union did raise those issues to the ministerial task team. We indicated that looking at the methodology that they've set for themselves, it is very clear to us that we are not going to see the kind of participation that we all anticipated. But one is going to talk more about that. But if you read again the report by the ministerial task team, it indicated that there was no cooperation on our part as the National Teachers Union. So we want to place it on record that at no stage that the National Teachers Union refused to participate in the investigation as said by the minister. And to an extent that we had our own engagement with the ministerial task team on the 4th of November 2014 in a Coastland Hotel, where we indicated to them what are the things that we believe are going to assist the ministerial task team to be able to get more people who are going to provide evidence, who are going to participate and give the necessary information for the task team to be able to do an excellent job. So our willingness and readiness to engage with the task team is demonstrated by the richness and extent of good advice we gave them at the meeting. But one is still going to talk more about that. But we also want to indicate that it is very sad and very mischievous of the task team to have simply brushed aside all the critical issues that we raised at the National Teachers Union because they wanted to justify that we never participated in the process. But what is also important for this portfolio committee to note is that the ministerial task team decided to concentrate and make very, very wrong emphasis. In as far as we are concerned as the National Teachers Union, we expected the ministerial task team to put strong emphasis on what we understood to be the real mandate, which is the broad spectrum of selling of posts. We wanted the task team to concentrate mainly on, in case there's somebody selling the post, how are the posts being sold? We wanted the task team to concentrate on what is the role that is being played by ourselves as trade union and what is the role that is being played by the department in terms of the selling of the post. But we believe that there is no excellent job that was done by the ministerial task team. So instead, they decided to concentrate mainly on engaging stakeholders, looking at their role, on the appointment of the school-based educators, how are the posts being filled, which, in as far as we are concerned, was not a strong emphasis that was supposed to be put by the ministerial task team. No wonder that, Chairperson, the ministerial task team ended up placing a disproportional huge emphasis on the advice, advising the minister on how to improve existing legislation, provisions and policies in relation to the appointments. Not necessarily that we're not expecting the ministerial task team to make such suggestions. But what we wanted the ministerial task team was to trace and find those people who are claiming that in the system of education there is a selling and there is also buying of posts. But unfortunately, they did not want to concentrate mainly on that. But we'll give the reasons why we are saying they did not want to concentrate mainly on that. Chairperson, we take ourselves very seriously as the National Teachers Union. But if you read the ministerial task team you will see that the ministerial trust team, the section 2.16 of the ministerial trust team report, where we were nicknamed as the National Association of Teachers Union, NATO. As a teachers union, that has been in the education landscape for a very long time. For the records, in 2018, we'll be celebrating our 100 years of existence, Chairperson. So now that is why, in as far as we are concerned, we are saying what was done by the ministerial trust team is tantamount to name calling. And we did raise that issue, and we indicated that it shows that they did not put effort in ensuring that everything about the report was relevant and appropriate, and they were engaging with the very right people. Now, coming to what we said we are going to talk more about, that is the process and the methodological limitation. Like we indicated that on the 4th of November we met with the ministerial trust team, but we were concerned about the process and the methodology that was adopted by the ministerial trust team. Now, what do we mean about that? We said to the ministerial trust team, we only learned about them starting to investigate after we've received a letter from the ministerial trust team inviting us to come and participate, giving us a date for the meeting between NATO and the ministerial trust team. But remember, NATO is the one that was going to be investigated with all other trade unions. The department was to be investigated by the ministerial trust team. So the expectation was that the ministerial trust team should have issued a circular to all the educators in the system of education, because you cannot simply write us as people who are under investigation and expect us that we are going to communicate information to our members, because if we are selling the post, you cannot expect us to go and find people that we've been selling the post to, that we've been buying the post to. But we expected the ministerial trust team to write a circular, like it is the procedure in the department, where all the schools in the Republic of South Africa will receive a letter indicating that when is the investigation starting, and who to be conducted should you want to come up with information, what procedures and systems are in place to ensure that whoever that is coming up with critical information, that person is protected. That, remember, there was at some stage a Marikana Commission where we had people who came to testify as Mr. X and so on and so forth. That was designed to protect those whistleblowers, so that whoever that intends to come in the ministerial trust team knows that is very, very protected by the entire system. Hence, we're questioning the process and also the issue of the methodology that they were also utilizing. We said that NATO appropriate processes and methodology validate the outcomes of any investigation. We thought it was an investigation, not just a research, where you need to sample. You are just sampling. You get a few people, then you conclude, because most of the time research, whoever that is doing the research is having some preconceived information. Hence, we talk about hypotheses and researches. So now, that is why then we said, we want the methodology and the process to be valid so that it can have a positive impact on the entire process of investigating. As things stand now, it is very difficult for NATO to find much trustworthiness, credibility, and sincerity in their findings contained in the ministerial trust team. Some of the reasons for our misgiving include the following, Chairperson. The location of the secretariat. If you are to participate in the in the ministerial trust team, the person that was going to conduct to is an official of the Department of Education, which is also under investigation. You come and you present your case. The first person who's going to receive you is a person that you knew was very prominent in the trade union, which the trade union is also under investigation. So now, as the National Teachers Union, we raise serious concern about the location of the secretariat that was to serve and service the ministerial trust team, being based in the Department of Basic Education, which was part of the entities to be investigated. We had a problem with that. To us, that was illogical. To NATO, this carried a high risk for the conflict of interest on the part of the employees concerned, as well as some members of the ministerial trust team. membership composition of the ministerial trust team, we raised serious issue of a possible conflict of interest in respect of some members of the ministerial trust team who are well known to have played prominent and protracted role in the teacher union movement before their appointment to the Department of Basic Education and subsequently to the ministerial trust team. There is a role that is also that was played by the chairperson of the ministerial trust team, Professor Volmik, in different trade unions, doing the research work, coming to the what you call conferences to do presentation on specific research papers. We questioned that. We were very upfront, even in a meeting of the ministerial committee when we were invited as the National Teachers Union. NATO seriously doubted the credibility and the neutrality of these individuals with regard to their ability to discharge the ministerial task team mandate fairly, exhaustively, and non-partisan manner as required by the Minister of Basic Education. Well, it's well known that immediately after this matter was in the media, NATO was very upfront again. We said the solution to this kind of a problem was the establishment of the Judicial Commission of Inquiry, and we're still going to talk about that. Again, we also want to talk about the speed. We expressed concern about the breakneck speed at which the ministerial task team proceeded with its investigation, as it appeared that getting to the finish line was much more important to them than digging up the dead that they were mandated to uncover. We could easily see that in their rush to get to the finish line, many potential witnesses would be left behind. Even today, we believe that this is what actually happened as the National Teachers Union. The absence of the circulars, any employee in the Department of Education is aware that if there is any decision or anything happening in the system of education, you are going to get a circular, and whoever every time will refer to the circular number that was issued, inviting people to come and participate. Again, remember, the investigation happened during the school hours. So for teachers to go and participate in the ministerial trust team, they must get a permission from somebody. But that person can't grant that permission if there is no circular that says, in case of somebody who wants to go and participate, what procedure must be followed, what kind of a leave must be granted. Because our members as the National Teachers Union wants to make sure that they are in school teaching, doing the work that they are employed to do. So there was no circular to assist them. And while before they could even get the information, they learned that the ministerial task team has finalized its work. They are finding, after that there were calls, immediately after the report that the ministerial task team concluded its investigation, people started to inquire whether they can still come forward because they were not aware about the work that was being done by the ministerial task team. We don't know whether it was an undercover operation, in as far as we are concerned as the National Teachers Union. NATO was further concerned that the ministerial task team had not put adequate system in place to maximize the participation of the affected people, whom the investigation sought to reach or ought to have targeted. We don't know who was the target because we received an invitation, but our teachers were never invited. Other organizations received invitations, but their members were never targeted. Now then the question is, was the ministerial task team expecting those who are alleged to have been participants in the selling of posts to come and give them evidence on how they are selling the post, to whom they sold the post to, how did they do the process, how much is the post? Those things are supposed to be received by people that were to be targeted by the ministerial task team, who were never invited at any stage by the task team until they've concluded their work. In particular, 2 minutes. Well, we just want to just go straight to the recommendations now. Chairperson, the issue of protection of witnesses, whistleblowers, all those people, we indicated that if we don't have a judicial commission of inquiry, it is definitely going to be a problem. So this is what we want to indicate to this committee. Proper investigation. As the National Teachers Union, we offer an opinion that a proper investigation of the allegation of the malpractice in the appointment and the recruitment of teachers be conducted by a proper constituted judicial commission of inquiry in terms of the Commissions Act and Section 84 of the South African Constitution. Two, witness protection. Given that the ministerial task team failed to offer protection to witnesses, NATO had recommended that names of witnesses be deleted from the report before it was released. But unfortunately, they never listened to anyone. Three, retraction of the ANC government policy of the cadre deployment. That the ANC government policy of the cadre deployment be retracted in order to ensure that all citizens of the Republic of South Africa are afforded an equal and a fair chance of securing employment in the country of their birth. In this regard, NATO notes that the ministerial task team remarks at page 17 of its report that the DBE lack appointment and the recruitment practices that acknowledge the critical nature of acquiring competent professionals through the application and the use of special tools and processes to give credibility and validity to the process. A big part of the absence of the proper recruitment modalities which follow standard recruitment principles is attributed to the government policy of cadre deployment. So that is what we are saying is not. In conclusion, the reality is that despite the magnitude of the allegations that the MTT set out to investigate, methodologically and the cage process that the task team followed seriously compromised its work. That's what we are saying. No doubt that the selling of post as alleged and the scale of it amounted to a very serious public sector crisis and had an immense negative impact on the public confidence vis-a-vis our country's education system. In our view as NATO, we believe that delivering such hodgepodge investigation as the ministerial task team had done has amounted to nothing but denial of access to justice to many victims of this scam. From the beginning, it was as if main purpose of the task team was to hide rather than expose the truth. That is what we believe as NATO. Conclusion again, certainly, the task team developed clearly safeguards to ensure the protection of both the whistleblowers and potential witnesses from possible harassment, intimidation, or even death, as we still have pending cases of people who passed on simply because they were fighting against the selling of posts in this republic. So that is why now, as NATO are saying, without doubt, the fear of reprisal acted as a very powerful deterrent in preventing many potential witnesses from coming forward to testify. In turn, this would have validated and legitimized the outcome of this investigation and giving the work of the task team the much needed credibility and trustworthiness. It is unfortunate, Chair, that all the above mentioned information that was shared by the NATO's interaction with the ministerial task team was simple and easily dismissed in phase one of the discussion. That is NATO's refusal to participate. We never refused to participate. All people that we met, members of the ministerial task team, they are aware of the good work that, and the recommendations we made to them to assist them to get more people to participate. But we still remain pondering the question, why did the task team decide to hide the important contributions and the reservations that we have made to them on behalf of so many teachers whom the union represent? To us, this demonstrated bad faith, ill will, hostility, bias towards NATO, therefore confirming the lack of neutrality and the fairness which had earlier we warned the task team about. So we want to thank you, Chairperson of this task team, of the portfolio committee. We believe that there is no good work that was done by the ministerial task team. There is a lot of work that was omitted by the ministerial task team, and we believe that we still need to open an opportunity for people to come and testify, knowing that their lives are very safe and the system of education is willing to accept and receive every contribution that they want to make. I thank you.
Thank you very much. Natu, can I check again? Bewu did not come. Oh, the. Oh, I'm sorry, I did not see. Let us take the last trade union. Oh, they must come to an end. Oh, I'm sorry, SOU. I'm so sorry. What happened? I'm sorry, SOU. Can you come in? I thought really that was the last union. I'm so sorry. SOU, SAOU, can you come in, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you for the honourable members to also be able to address you in this particular forum. Madam Chair, we are grateful for the opportunity to address you, and we're also grateful for the investigation that took place with regard to the selling of educator posts. As intimated earlier, we have all heard various rumours in this regard, and we were equally concerned about this. We are absolutely convinced that such actions do not belong in education, and that the law must run its course to actually charge the perpetrators. We are, however, concerned that a large part of the report deals with matters outside the actual brief of the ministerial task team. Instead of adhering to the brief, that is the identification of perpetrators and the appropriate actions that must be taken against them, the report to a large part is a vade mecum, that is an easy way out to deal with other aspects that are not part of their particular brief. To base the complete overhaul of the process of appointment and the erosion of the powers of its school governing bodies on the report is not acceptable. The current system of public schools, and we want to emphasize the point that they are not regarded as state schools, is based on sound and universal principles of democracy. And incidentally, the SA Schools Act, the last dotting the I's and crossing the T's, took place in this particular venue a few years ago. The overarching theme of the recommendations is to advocate the large-scale centralization of the education system. We can come to no other conclusion that this is an initiative that will reinstate the schooling system that will be at the behest of the ruling political party in a particular province. And it reminds us of the 1976 model of schooling, and that is unacceptable. What all concerned role players in the public education system need to do is to address the negative perceptions regarding public education. And what we must do is we must foster ownership among all members of communities for their schools. If we cannot attain this, the perception that order and quality will only be found in the independent school system will be perpetuated. The best possible mechanism to strengthen public schools is through parents, their involvement, their active participation in school governing bodies, and also in the decision-making process. The vast majority of school governing bodies comply with their fiduciary duties, and we believe that that must be continued. If school governing bodies do not have the necessary skills and competencies, the blame must be laid before the door of the education authorities. The SAOU, and we believe the other unions and the school governing body organizations, we will take hands to address this particular problem so that we can ensure that all communities have functioning, well-functioning school governing bodies. And we repeat our offer in this regard. Madam Chief, we are equally concerned that the conclusions reached from our input was either badly understood or deliberately misrepresented. To regard our input as people resisting the transformation of pre-1994 hegemonic values is, to say the least, mischievous, malicious, and vindictive. That is a broad generalization, and we've spoken at length in this forum today about broad generalizations. It is a stereotyping of the SAOU that we do not accept. It also needs to be recorded, Madam Chair, that there's an uncanny correlation between the recommendations of the Ministerial Task Team and the Basic Education Laws Amendment Bill that did the rounds in August last year. And we believe that is something that needs to be addressed. If we now turn our attention to the various recommendations, we would like to report as follows. With regard to Recommendation 1, that is that the illegal actions by educators and departmental officials, and let's not forget them, Madam Chair, that they be reported to the SA Police Services. We support that fully. With regard to disciplinary action being taken against educators and officials, we also support that fully. With regard to recommendation 3, that actions be taken to protect and support whistleblowers, and that a dedicated unit must be established by the Department of Basic Education, we fully support that. With regard to recommendation 4, that the various provincial departments of education should regain control of the process of advertising and the filling of posts, and that the roles of the various role players be clearly delineated, we agree fully with that recommendation. However, we wish to add that the role of school governing bodies need to be added to that particular process, as we regard them as indispensable role players in this particular process. Recommendation 5, that deals with the education legislation, that it be amended to make provision for the delegation of authority concomitant with the public administration framework. We support that fully. With regard to recommendation 6, that the powers of school governing bodies to make recommendations for appointments be revoked, we do not support that recommendation. It is contrary to the agreement that we reached in this particular venue in 1996. A community should have the power to make recommendations with regard to teachers that fit the various communities' requirements for teachers. To regard all communities as the same is the grossest form of discrimination that we can find. The Provincial Department of Education has no responsibility towards a particular community. The departmental officials are not au fait with any community's requirements, as well as the relevant school's curriculum, extracurricular needs, and their own requirements. Recommendation 7, the principle of the detailed selection of principals in terms of competence, expertise, and suitability, and to ensure that we only appoint the most competent applicants as principals. We fully support the principle that principals must comply with minimum requirements with regard to suitability, academic qualifications, experience, and professional competencies. The possibility of pre-interviewing testing can be supported, provided that the assessment model is agreed to, and that means it's agreed to in the ELRC, and that it will be applied in such a manner that it will comply with the principles of equity and fairness. Furthermore, although the results of such testing may be made available to the envisaged selection panels or the interviewing committees, this information must be regarded as personal and confidential, and that is that it must only be used for that particular purpose. The principle of selection panel sounds fine, but the detail lies always in, the devil always lies in the detail. The caveat to this whole process is to note that the ELRC collective agreements underpin these processes. And what that means is that if there are any amendments to these processes, that it must be concluded by means of a collective agreement. And the organized teaching profession, Madam Chair, we have taken hands with the Department of Education, as has been indicated earlier today, to start with this process proactively to identify the shortcomings in the process and to jointly and collectively as partners come to a possible solution to address the problem. And we believe that we have shown a lot of progress in this regard over the last few weeks. With regard to Recommendation 8, the principle that a post-level educator cannot become a school principal, we support the notion, but we must bear in mind that there are small schools where the level of a school principal is on post-level 2, that's the level of a head of department. Then it can only come from the ranks of post-level 1 teachers. So it's difficult to just make a blanket recommendation in this regard, and you must understand the education system. Recommendation 9, to renegotiate the observer status of unions during the appointment process. We support that, and the focus should be on the essence of what the role and status of an observer is. Recommendation 10, the proven competency, professional experience and qualifications of district officials and the management of cadre redeployment, we fully support that, and we believe that this is the actual weak link in the whole whole system, and that is weak provincial department officials. Recommendation 11, that educators and district officials should no longer be allowed to A, officially represent political parties at any level, and B, that educators in management posts should not be allowed to occupy leadership positions in unions. We fully support the principle that education and political roles of persons should be divorced from each other. A school should at all times be regarded as politically neutral, and therefore the principal of such a school should not be an office bearer of a political party. And the same principle applies to district officials. The proposal that educators in management posts may not occupy leadership positions in teacher unions cannot be supported, and we believe that it will not pass the test of constitutionality. Recommendation 12, separate and distinct unions for office-based educators. It's not supported. It's in conflict with the principle of freedom of association. Recommendation 14, that discussions be held with universities, Department of Higher Education and the DBE to focus on the underpinning philosophy of education. We support that notion, but we must bear in mind that the biggest problem with the training of teachers these days is that their subject knowledge is not up to scratch, and that is something that must be addressed, and that needs further attention and bigger attention than just the philosophy of education. Recommendation 15, the role of SAIS, that it be reconceptualized and freed from union political domination. I think we've all spoken at length about it today, that the principle of non-dominance by any particular organization is supported. However, Madam Chair, we must bear in mind that any professional council is the responsibility of the profession itself. That means it governs itself with regard to moral and ethical codes of conduct and the minimum requirements for entering such a profession. We find it difficult that the teaching profession should be degraded in comparison with other professions, so we will not support that particular notion. And then recommendation 16, that SAIS should release the findings of an investigation. I think we support that. In conclusion, Madam Chair, we are grateful for the opportunity to make recommendations, and we trust that the educational authorities will not abuse their position in terms of their legislative powers to circumvent their duty to bargain on many of these issues. And we look forward to further cooperation with all parties to ensure that we have a fair and equitable system. Thank you.
Thank you very much, SAOU, for your presentation, your contribution. Let me now give it to Peu. Your 10 minutes, Bill.
Thank you, Chairperson. Together with your Portfolio Committee on Basic Education, we just want to thank you for affording us the opportunity to come and make this presentation, and also to indicate that the person who was supposed to be here, the General Secretary, could not make it due to other commitments. Allow me to go through this presentation. That the Professional Educators Union welcomes the release of the long-awaited report on the selling and the buying of teaching posts. We therefore urge, well in advance, Minister Angie Motshekga to not even think of, but to just go ahead in pressing criminal charges with law enforcement agents against those fingered by the report, to ensure that this cancerous anathema, which is hell-bent on discrediting the teaching profession and the delivery of quality education to our nation, becomes uprooted once and for all. We welcome the report and seize this moment to show our colleagues to the MTT, led by Professor Volmik, for the effort put in executing this seemingly energy-sapping exercise that proved to be met by technicalities and tactics. Minister Angie Motshekga is also thanked for having mastered the necessary courage to follow her convictions to appoint the team. The report could not have come at a better time than this, when the moral of many deserving educators is below its lowest ebb, due to the fact that they have been continuously and deliberately sidelined when it comes to promotional posts. We, however, notwithstanding contextual factors such intimidation, expressed our concern that 38 cases for those fingered in the scam is just a scratch on the surface, as many of these cases fell between the cracks, and with hindsight, a judicial commission would have gone a long way in ensuring that we get to the bottom of the scams. We also feel that, as things stand, some of the perpetrators might be buoyed by the tactics of and branding themselves as the untouchable. Some of the team's findings, namely that 6 out of the 9 provinces have lost control and management of their respective education system, does not take us as a surprise, as we saw it coming, and that this simply marks the culmination of a long-standing practice of wrong appointments into position of management and responsibility. In the name of cadre deployment, and the latter is one of striking features of the report, which has been pervasive in these affected provinces from time immemorial. Cadre deployment, as pointed out in the report, ensure that appointments in higher positions in the department are skewed towards certain group of individuals with little or no consideration of what it takes to occupy such positions. The Professional Cadres Union feels vindicated by these findings, as most of our members remained victims of cadre deployment, and we at this point in time declare our unqualified support to the team's recommendation that it be done with. The fact that our school governing bodies were left to grapple with the enormous task of recruiting the educators in promotional posts, which warrants an in-depth knowledge of managerial skills, is rather asking too much from most communities, taking into account their level of education, which is of course concomitant with injustices of the past. This alone provides a fertile ground for scams, as many a times teacher unions do capitalize and occupy the space, thereby ending up dictating the way to go, which further paves way for exploitation due to the fact that some SGB's inability to deal with dynamics that comes with provincial resolutions and policies on the recruitment of teachers into promotional posts. Madam Chair, in conclusion, the findings of the report generally imbues one with vigor and courage and has provided a launching pad for stakeholders to look at the bigger picture and rise above the narrow self-centeredness and greed. With an endeavor to restore credibility to the teaching profession and confidence in our education system. All of the above is achievable only if those with the know-how are allowed to lead us without any form of attachment. We pledge our support to the minister in her endeavor to implement some of the recommendations made by the team, and will never stand on the way when those fingers in the report will be made to face the law, even if found to be members of the Professional Educators Union. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Bewu. We'll now go to the School Governing Body Associations, which we want to hear a lot again from them. They've been well spoken of in the report, their role that they have to play. Can I then hand over to FEDSAS?
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the opportunity. We have submitted a more comprehensive response I'm not going to repeat it, I'm just going to summarize. I must emphasize that our approach as an SGB association is not to respond to or to address the whole report, but only to focus on those parts of the report dealing with functions and powers of school governing bodies. And that is, as far as the recommendations are concerned, only recommendations 6, 7, and 8. Just the essence of appointments in education is the signature of an official duly authorized to appoint an educator in whatever position. That is where the final decision is made. So if a corrupt activity or unethical activity has taken place with regard to the appointment of any educator, it means that that official must have been corrupted. That official must have been paid for his or her signature on a letter of appointment. The report fails, as far as we are concerned, to recognize that particular essence of any appointment in education. There is no mention made in the report about the checks and balances that have been built into the system to ensure correct procedures and the appointment of appropriately and suitably qualified and able people. In fact, without getting into MTT bashing, the report, we point out, is riddled with flaws, inconsistencies, and generalizations, as we have heard, affecting, obviously, its reliability and credibility. There is no mention, as I've said, of the checks and balances that's built into the system. We deal in our written submission with these checks and balances on page, in paragraph 3.2, page 3 to 4 of our written submission. The absolutely astonishing comment that appears in the report is that there is nowhere in any provision in the education legislation where SGBs are required to account for their crucial role in the recruitment of educators. Now, with all due respect to the members of the MTT, that shows a lack of understanding of that which they were supposed to have investigated. And that undermines the credibility of the report. Chair and members of the Portfolio Committee, it's not the system that is corrupt. It is not the system that requires to be changed. It is people that are corrupt, that are corrupting the system. We acknowledge the fact, as has been pointed out in the report, that not all SGBs function at the required level. Not all SGBs have the necessary knowledge, skills, and expertise to fulfill their role in the appointment process at the level or at the standard at which we would be happy with it. For that very reason, Chair, I wrote to every provincial head of department in this country on the 2nd of March, if my memory serves me correctly, yes, the 2nd of March 2015, to offer our assistance to train school governing bodies. A lot of mention is made in the report of district managers, circuit managers, and other people criticizing the lack of training for which they are supposed to be responsible. We know they don't have the expertise, they don't have the capacity, they don't have the will to provide that training. For that very reason, I wrote to all provincial heads of department to say, we're prepared to do that training for them. Parliament amended SASA in 2011 to give HODs the authority to contract SGB associations to do that training. And I referred to that specific provision. Chair, only two provinces responded to my offer. That was Western Cape and Gauteng. But a response was the only thing we received. From seven of the provinces, we did not even receive an acknowledgement of the receipt to our offer. That is unacceptable. We're there, we're prepared to do that training. Now, those very same people to whom the offer was made are criticizing because of the lack of training. But when the opportunity was given to them, they didn't take it. Chair, I want to summarize with a response to the particular recommendations, the recommendation 6, that the powers of governing bodies to be involved in the recommendation of appointment. We don't appoint, we only recommend. Be taken away as far as post-level 2 and upwards posts are concerned. We reject that. We had a meeting on the 4th of May with Minister Motshekga. All recognized governing bodies, all recognized governing bodies were unanimous in our rejection of that particular recommendation. There was a joint statement issued on that day at the request of the Minister by all the SGB associations. That statement appears to have disappeared into cyberspace. The essence of the point we're making there is, Chair, you do not destroy democratic structures and democracy when some in that system have been or are corrupt or misbehave. As far as recommendation 7 is concerned, that relates to the appointment of principals, we give our qualified support to that, Chair. We've explained everything in our written statement, and then as far as recommendation 8 is concerned, that post-level 1 educators cannot be appointed as principals, Chair. It is true, as SOU has pointed out, that at small schools, you have to have post-level 2 principals. Now, if post-level 1 people cannot be appointed to post-level 2 as principals, where are those principals going to come from? That, Chair, is also essentially an indication of the lack of understanding by the MTT of the whole appointment process. And with all due respect, no reliance can be placed on recommendations 5, 6, or 6, 7, and 8. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. On behalf of the Governing Body Association, it's a great pleasure to be here and to make this presentation. We were invited to come to this particular meeting and to express the views of our organization on the report, its findings, and its recommendations. We will stick to that particular mandate. I think that we are all aware of the years of beneath-the-surface rumblings about the selling of posts and the undue influence when it comes to appointments in education in South Africa. I'd particularly like us to concentrate on the fact that it is both of those and not just one of them that is important, and I will return to that in a moment. When the concept of the selling of posts broke in the press, we believe that the Minister of Education moved with commendable haste to appoint this ministerial task team, and we commend her on that. The report suggests that the current appointments process has huge inconsistencies and problems, and we certainly concur with that. There's consequently, they suggested, a strong need to review the process, and again, that is something with which we agree. The question then is not so much what is in the report or not in the report and whether it was true or not true, but just how we go about ensuring that the system works better in the future than it has worked in the immediate past. The current reality is that the report finds that there has indeed been undue influence in the making of appointments, and it finds that posts have been both literally and figuratively sold. And that is where I believe it is very important to look at the concept of the undue influence. We believe that although there may only have been 7 or 38, depending on how you count them, particular cases reported of the selling of posts, we believe that the entire system has been absolutely riddled with undue influence by both officials and individuals when it comes to the appointments. The report particularly suggests that unions, and one more so than most, have played a pivotal role in this. But the officials of the department have also come in for significant criticism.
It's interesting to us that those who are least implicated in the abuses are the governing bodies. And yet, for some reason, it is the governing bodies that stand to bear the brunt and lose most if some of the key recommendations are implemented. Two critical aspects of the report in this regard. Firstly, the finding that the Department of Basic Education has retained a semblance of managerial and administrative control in only 3 of the 9 provinces. In all the other provinces, the report suggests that one of the unions is in de facto control. In the light of that, we find it absolutely incomprehensible that there can be a recommendation that the powers of school governing bodies to make recommendations for appointment at post level 2 and above be taken away, and that the governing body should not play any role in the appointments process, and that it be handed to those who have been fingered by the report as the ones who have had the greatest undue influence. We are further concerned, as an aside, that there seems to be certainly rumour that even the possibility of recommending at post level 1 should be removed. Giving rise to an overriding concern is the foregoing. We would take that further by saying that in the light of the role of officials in the abuses, the Governing Body Foundation cannot understand, let alone accept, the task team's proposal that responsibility for appointments in essence be handed over to the Education Department. That doesn't mean that we don't like anything about the report. There is a great deal that we like, and I'm not going to go through all of those again. Certainly we accept unreservedly recommendations 1 to 5, and I've mentioned those there in the document that you have in front of you. There are certainly other acceptable suggestions, for example, recommendations 11, 12, 13, and 14, which have all been touched on previously, so I'm not going to go through those again. And there are some entirely sensible proposals that principals be selected by means of panels which can evaluate the competency and suitability of the candidates, that the panels should include educators of a suitable rank. We would add one little bit to it, perhaps not just educators, but also educationists, those who understand and know the system. We certainly believe that positions of school management should be subjected to selection processes. Our big plea in all of this is that the governing body should be allowed to be part of that. I don't know to what extent it is understood and well known that although the unions and the departmental officials sit on the ELRC, we have no sitting there, and therefore we have no ability to influence the decisions that are made at ELRC level, although we are the ones that have to implement them and bear the brunt of many of those decisions. There's another suggestion in the proposals that has been touched on at the moment, and that is the disallowance of a person to move from post level 1 into principalship. In general, we would believe that that is a sensible provision. We go along with the problem, of course, of the fact that some people are appointed as principals only at post level 2, so where are they going to come from if they don't come from post level 1? But we would go one step further, and we would plead that this isn't written into the regulations as an absolute inflexible requirement, but that there be some flexibility there, that, for instance, where somebody is clearly suitable for that post, and especially if that person should have had experience in a leadership or middle management post in a governing body post and not in the official departmental posts, that they be allowed to skip a post. We don't believe that there should be an absolute ban on post skipping. There's been a lot said this morning about generalizations, and one of them we believe is the suggestion that the DBE and the DHET develop certain concepts. We believe that those concepts should be developed, that they should be consistent with our history, in tune with the Constitution. But we believe, in fact, that this has already been done. We believe that that was done very, very effectively in particularly White Paper 2 on education. And we would hope that we could return to the concepts espoused by real experts and a significant amount of negotiation in White Paper 2 and that we don't have a look at a reinvention of the educational wheel. On the matter of union, of principals and other high-level people in education not being allowed to hold office in unions, we would be absolutely opposed to that. We believe that they are the people who should be, in fact, running the unions, and that their exclusion would completely change the face of unions and unionism in South Africa. It would emasculate the unions, it would rob the unions of their best brains, their most experienced members, and in fact, we also believe, of a moderating voice, which comes with experience and maturity. We believe it would not be a good thing for education, and we would certainly not support it. There's a real contradiction in something that is being put into the report, which says that it should be borne in mind that governing bodies were established to ensure community participation in schools, and so changes to the process of appointments should not remove the capacity of parents to participate in the choices. Absolutely, surely, fully supportable. And yet they then go with a strange contradiction which says that these very people, the governing bodies, should not play a role. There's certainly also a worrisome assumption to us. The report appears to regard it as problematic that education has an appointments regimen which differs from that of police and other sectors of government. We believe it is absolutely imperative that it should differ from the police and hospitals and so on. For example, if we go to use the services of the police or SARS, we are certainly, as clients, not responsible for the maintenance of the SARS buildings, for the collection of funds on behalf of SARS, for disciplining staff or clients of SARS or the police, for managing their buildings, for monitoring their improvement plans and development plans, or for entering into contracts on their behalf. All of those are responsibilities of governing bodies. The biggest thing, though, is we believe that as parents, we give over our children compulsorily into schools for more than half their waking lives from the age of 6 to 16. And to say that we cannot have any say in who the responsible educators and leaders are that are going to look after that most precious possession we have, our children, that we cannot have an input into who those people are, we find that absolutely inexplicable. Very quickly touching on some history, in and around 1994, a number of initiatives were called into existence to design a new education dispensation. An overriding principle permeating all the thought processes was that education should be democratized. It was in the pursuit of this democratic principle in this country which was moving to be a democratic country, this goal, this holy grail, that governing bodies were born. This is not only widely recognized, but was strongly embraced even as far as the Constitutional Court, which said, and I quote, that participation and engagement are central to our constitutional project and a reflection of our negotiated revolution. We cannot ignore the vital role played by school governing bodies, which function as a beacon of grassroots democracy in ensuring a democratically run school, and that the sensitive scheme of powers of governing bodies vis-à-vis the state enacted by this very parliament needs to be respected. That is what the Constitutional Court has said. I certainly would not differ with that by one word. So what is it that we would like to see? We would like to see recognition of the critical realization that the responsibility of making teaching staff appointments is the clearest indication of the extent to which real devolution and democracy of decision making at the school level has taken place, and we would like to see that continue. We would like the compromise suggested by the authors of the education white papers be returned to the central point that staff appointments should be a shared interest of SGBs and departments, with the initiative rightly belonging at the SGB level, that the department should have the ultimate authority to appoint staff, but the decision should be made in consultation with the governing body in a true display of partnership, and that the department should have the discretion to decline a recommendation from the governing body only on the grounds of professional incompetence inappropriate qualifications, misconduct, or prima facie evidence of improper influence. We believe very strongly that it would be bad for education and bad for democracy to write parents out of the equation. We believe it would be worse for education and worse for democracy if unfettered controlling powers were to be handed to education departments. We believe that the weaknesses in the system lie not in the rules, but in their implementation. We believe that you don't throw out the system simply because you don't like how certain people manage or manipulate it. We need to recognize, as has been said several times, that we need to train governors, not to ditch them. And we make a massive plea to be able to be given a chance to propose some workable models, even though we are not allowed to do so in the ELRC. We would not like governing bodies' official voice to be silenced in this matter. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, our stakeholders. We've had our 9 presentations, honourable members. I know it has been quite long for us to listen. But thank you ever so much for the contributions that you have made. As we have said when we started, we believe that we are looking at this report with whatever shortcomings that everyone might have touched on, but the fact of the matter is we've got something to work on. We need to clear up and clean up the processes, more especially the appointments, and I think we all agree on that one, as to say each and everyone, all the presentations, we're talking to that, looking at the recommendations, what we really, you really support and your proposal and so forth, and it warrants that even the department moving forward, taking from here, there's so much and various further consultations that need to be done, working on the issues that are being raised by the report and the recommendations that are coming from it. But I strongly believe we are all saying in your presentation, we are all fighting to make sure that there is that credibility. We don't compromise the integrity of our system. That is what we are all fighting for. Honourable members, can we then now engage on the presentation that were made to us? Let us come up with contributions. But the fact of the matter, we have heard, we are still going to have our own meetings to process, but I think it was a worthwhile exercise that we made today. Let me note hand of the honourable members who would love to say something on what has been raised here. Let me know. Let me just come down. Can I start with you, Honourable Chaisa? Welcome to the meeting. Chaisa, Honourable Mabika, Honourable Davis, Honourable Basson, Honourable Mkoto, Honourable Boshoff. Let me take those hands for now. Oh, your hand was up, Honourable Khoza. I'm sorry, Honourable Khoza. Yeah, let us start with you then. Can I then request and plead with you, Honourable, our stakeholders? It won't be dialogues. We are all taking up the discussions now. Let us just jot down, because I will allow all the honourable members to raise their views, to raise their questions, if ever there are questions. Thereafter, you will be given a chance, if ever you want to respond to some of the things that will be raised here. So can I come to you, Honourable Chaisa?
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson. Getting it from you, the presentations that were made here in my